Hi, I'm Charlie Yvonne Simpson.
Hi, I'm Nzinga Williams.
Hey, I'm Whitney White. Hey, everyone, it's Miranda Heyman, and you're listening to the Call and Response Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And y'all probably already knew this, but I am a true Disney kid at heart. I used to have a Pocahontas comforter, I used to have Little Mermaid pillowcases, and I would always give living room performances singing along to my favorite Disney tunes for Mama Fitz. It's been a constant in my life. I just love the pure whimsy and magic in the worlds that they create, and how the courageous outsiders are always uplifted and triumph. I mean, I could keep going, but just this love goes deep. And what I will say is that this week I was lucky enough to go to the concert celebrating 25 years of Disney magic on stage benefiting Broadway Cares. And, well, there's no other word to describe it. It was magical. So many different Disney alumni came to perform, including three podcast alums, Bradley Gibson, Alton Fitzgerald White, and Jelani Aladdin, who sang this powerful and moving rendition of Go the Distance from Hercules. I mean, it was incredible. I was not prepared, okay? And even though it was a one-night-only event, you can experience the magic of Disney on stage with Frozen, which Gold Star just happens to have affordable ticket options for. And as you know, that is just the beginning with Gold Star. They provide affordable tickets to theater, comedy shows, concerts, and so much more. So download Gold Star, and let's make some memories, y'all. Every week I'm like, I'm so hype, I'm so thrilled, I'm so excited, and then I talk about how I say that every week and how it's never going to change, and it's never going to change because I'm so hype, I'm so thrilled, I'm so excited to introduce today's guest. Where to begin? She's a Princess Grace Award honorario winning writer, director, producer, deviser of performance. You may have seen her work through being the artistic associate at Roundabout, the resident director at The Tank, New George's affiliate artist, and 2019 Audrey resident, Space on Writer Farm 2019 creative resident, 2019-2020 New York Theater Workshop 2050 directing fellow, Manhattan Theater Club directing fellow, former Alan Lee Hughes directing fellow at Arena Stage, Lincoln Center Theater Directors Lab member, Wing Space Mentorship Program, and then y'all, her resume is stacked too. We'll just get it all. I just found out she's a Virgo, which explains all of this, okay? It is Miranda Heyman, y'all. Give it up. Hi.
Hello.
Yo.
Yes. What's up?
When do you sleep?
Honestly, I get a lot of sleep.
Do you?
I definitely get more sleep than I used to in high school. In high school, I got so little sleep. I had so much sleep debt.
Oh, my goodness.
And usually, I aim for 8.5 hours of sleep.
What?
Yeah. And I usually get like 7.5 to that. Like, it's rare that I get fewer than 7.5 hours of sleep.
I also nap.
I love naps.
What?
I love napping.
I mean, don't we all? But literally, how do you get this all done? You are out here thriving.
It really is big Virgo energy.
Okay. You know what? That's our 2019 motto now.
Yeah.
Big Virgo energy.
I mean, people really hate on Virgos, which I understand because we are a problem.
Y'all are just perfectionists.
Yeah. But then, I mean, the crippling anxiety that comes with being a Virgo, mm-hmm. that's what they don't see.
Mm-hmm. All the stuff happening inside.
That's right.
Ooh. No, I loved when I was researching all of your fellowship titles. Like, this is so exciting. We have to celebrate. So I was like, I'm writing all of these down. We are going to list all of them during the intro. Because you're out here doing the damn thing.
Yeah. And,
you know.
I mean, maybe this is too heavy for right now, but to be completely honest, I have a lot of, I don't want to say difficulty, but it's complicated to be a member of a marginalized community and be both a beneficiary of and a token of so much institutional support. And it's something I think about all the time.
No, let's get into it.
That was
deep as hell, but yeah.
But it's true because, you know, while I've been a part of institutions for a long time, obviously we're all part of the larger institutions that this country puts upon us, and obviously globally and systemically and historically. But at a lower level, at a smaller level, right? I've been in private schools for, I went to private school for middle school. I went to private school for high school. I went to a liberal arts college that was also private. And I really, I didn't realize how much institutional trauma I hold in my body. And what that means for how much I know how to navigate these places, because I'm immediately aware of my position in these places. And that's not to condemn any of these places at all. In fact, I'm interested in talking about how the fact that I have been able to have such, you know, a kick-ass few years since I graduated from college because of the institutional support that I've had. But I really want to start talking about, you know, not only what that support can do and how institutions of all sizes can provide that support to a variety of individuals, whether or not that's a title, whether or not that's a check, whether or not that's a stage, whether or not that's a reading, you know, is dependent on the resources of that institution. But I also want to talk about what it means for those bodies who are part of those institutions, you know, hate to say it, as tokens, whether we like it or not, that are part of these institutions, that are part of that change at these institutions. What does it mean for them to have to hold both sides of the same coin and have to negotiate that dynamic?
Do you feel, what does it feel like? Like you said, it what you hold in your body, what does it feel like to be one of the only Black women, one of the only people of color in these really white spaces?
I mean, it feels, it in a fucked up way, it feels kind of like I'm at home because I've been in those spaces for so long.
Wow, yeah.
I've been the only, or the few, or the couple for so long. So what is it, what it means, though, is that I always feel like I'm a target. I'm what it feels like when I go home at night or when I walk into these buildings is that, like, I am at home, but I'm also, again, it's a negotiation. It really is a negotiation within myself of, when is it convenient that I'm here? And when is it inconvenient that I'm here? And how, and to be honest, I've I don't want to say I've been lucky, but I've really put all of those institutions that I have affiliations with, I've had conversations with them about that, and I've talked to them about what it means for me to be there. So I feel like I'm able to have an open dialogue with them, but also know that not necessarily that there's a solution, but that there is a multiplicity and there is a nuance to the accolades. And my big thing is, you know, okay, how can I not only have the support that I've had selfishly and personally exist for decades beyond, you know, the actual 8 months or year or whatever, month sometimes. And then how can I take those resources, and again, resources could be so many things, money, time, space, a title,
right,
an email introduction, how do I take those resources and how do I identify those resources and spread them out? Not just saying, oh, that means I need to bring everybody and their mama up into the building. It's not necessarily that, but it's like, oh, maybe I can develop while I'm, you know, something that I did while I was at Roundabout is I was developing in the penal colony. Because I said to myself, oh, you know, this is a way in which I can spread the resources of the fact that I do have a stable income. And that means that I can raise money for a show and I can produce a show and I have and I have the energy to produce a show. The resource of, I'm converting the resource of Roundabout into a resource that means I can give an opportunity for three Black men and for the rest of our production team in order for a show to come out of the fact that I do have the time and space to be able to make something. So I'm it's a lot of, I took AP Bio for like a hot second.
God bless you.
But don't, that was a whole, basically I was like, I'm not taking physics. And then and then they were like, okay, you either need to take a year of physics or a year of AP Bio. And
where I said, was chemistry in all of this?
Well, my freshman year, I took, intro bio. Intro chem.
Got it.
And then my junior year, I was like, no thanks. No science for me. I'm going to take theater electives all year. And that's what I did. And then senior year, they were like, okay, Miranda.
Nice
like,
try.
You want to graduate with a high school diploma. You need to do one more year of science. And they said, you can either do physics or bio. And I was like, I'll do bio. But what I do remember from bio is like ATP. I don't know what it stands for, but I know it's energy.
Okay. I'm not the right person to ask. Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is, you know, like I feel like I'm constantly converting my resources into like a kind of ATP that can be not necessarily distributed, but can be spread out.
Right.
And can exist in this longevity for me, the people I love, the people who I work with.
Yeah.
Who are more often than not queer, people of color,
mm-hmm.
and female and non-binary identifying folks.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel, how do you feel in all black spaces comparatively?
It's really fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a kind of, the idea of spectatorship and performance is just so different.
Huh.
You know, like, no matter what, we're all watching each other perform. Mm. That's just what it means to, you know, live in a heightened state of performance and live in a world in which we all have a persona and we have several personas and we're, this is like some crazy performance theory I'm getting into, but you know, like we are a reflection of our personas and how people attach an image and project an image onto those personas.
Mm-hmm.
So when that person who is watching your personas at play and watching you at play looks like you, or, you know, not even necessarily looks like you, like has that shared identifying experience,
mm-hmm.
that really changes your own perception of yourself because of what is being projected onto you.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in all black spaces, there's no, I lose the, I don't want to say the filter, but the concept of my performance changes and I become a kind of, I don't become a different person. I just become a different version of myself that is rarer.
Does it feel freer? Does it feel realer?
No, it doesn't feel, to me, it doesn't feel, you know, realer. It just, it's a kind of satisfaction that I've identified and feels really pure. And I seek it out more because I know it's rare.
Yeah.
Like, I know the opportunity for me to not be watched by white folks is rare. So when I'm there, I realize I'm there and I take it in. But I wouldn't necessarily attribute it to a better or freer. I recognize that it's rare and that's why it's gold.
Yeah. Wow. You're fucking me up. But like,
I fuck myself
welcome.
Up.
Welcome. This is great.
I'm dead ass. This is me laying awake in bed at night.
Before you get your 8 hours of sleep.
Before my 8 hours of sleep. I use Bedtime, the app on. That really helps me.
Okay. I don't know.
I have a lot of apps that support me. That's also super Virgo.
I was going to say, like, sponsored by Virgo Energy. I have lots of apps. That's hilarious. I feel, it's interesting to hear you share this experience because I think for a lot of black theater artists, there is a sense of duality almost, you know, of when they have to, quote, behave a certain way in white spaces, which is a lot of the time for theater. And I'm wondering, in terms of like the queer community as well, how you grapple with your own identity, I guess.
So I had the privilege, the actual privilege, of working on Hurricane Diane at the New York Theater Workshop earlier this season.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I had been in a room with so many artists that identified as, you know, lesbian, gay, trans, queer,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, in forever.
Mm-hmm.
Forever. And that, again, was another opportunity where I was like, whoa, like, this is a version of myself that I do not know. And actually, one of the designers on that team, I had worked with them previously, and they said, like, whoa, like, this is a Miranda I've never seen.
Mm.
And I said, same.
Wow.
I said, same.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what it was like to, you know, of course, you know, be professional, but work in a room with that many people who had that shared experience and shared identifier.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, like, intersectionality not out of the way. Of course, there were many ways in which we didn't have commonalities.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize when I am in those rare spaces, and as much as I seek out creating more,
mm-hmm.
I'm also recognizing the side of me that I don't get to see when I am in those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And how I, you know, it's kind of like a mindfulness practice.
Okay.
It's like, oh, like, I am, I'm recognizing that I am a different version of myself, mm-hmm. in this kind of room. And that's exciting. And I'm going to note it. And I'm going to seek it out more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And create it. So I think that, so it was really revealing to me the kind of person I was able to become, or the persona that I was able to let grow and nurture because I was in those spaces.
Right, in a queer space like that.
Exactly.
So then, and what about, and maybe this applies to the bigger, like, institutional side of theater, but, like, being a Black woman within the queer theater space, and I mean that in the sense basically of, like, yes, theater's very queer, but it's very, like, white gay man.
It's very homogenous.
You know what I mean?
It's a very, very specific kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kind of queer. Mm-hmm.
Genre.
A genre,
yes,
yeah.
Taste, flavor.
How do you navigate that?
I just think that we really have to... I think that by being vocal, and by recognizing it and being, you know, like, this happens to me a lot with women. Like, cis women, but, you know, them being like, yeah, but as a woman. And I'm like, okay, yeah. I did improv in high school, so I'm like, okay, I'm about to hit you with a yes and. Sure. It's actually really a sure and.
Uh-huh.
I mean, sure, and also. But there are ways in which your experience is not my experience.
Right.
And if we're able to recognize that, then that's actually when we can talk about spectrum of identities. That's actually when we can start to talk about, you know, not just diversity with a lowercase d, but like, like, what it, like, homogenous.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, homogeneity can still have a lack of it can still be diverse, but there still can be like a homogeneity to the kind of experience and the kind of ways in which those folks might identify as diverse.
Right.
Which is why I'm more interested in talking about, well, what normative structures exist in theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really not, diversity is a crazy word.
It's a buzzword these days.
Yeah, it's an insane word. And while I understand, and I don't want to dismiss its use when it is helpful,
mm-hmm.
or when it is useful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just right now more interested in talking about normativity and homogeneity and structural sameness.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, to be like, well, there's all women in a room. I'm like, well, is this only a kind of woman?
Yep.
It usually is. Or, you know,
right.
Oh, there's only all Black people in this room. Well, is it like a kind of Black person? Do we all have similar pedigrees of education? Did we all go to similar kinds of places? Are we all from the East Coast? Are we all American city? You know, there's just.
Right. Right.
So that's why I'm more interested in asking or trying to push places to say, well, sure. And that's great. And we should celebrate it. Yes. But also, who is not, there's still more to be done.
Diversifying the diversity.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so real, though. How would you define diversity?
Listen.
Is that, yeah.
To me, I actually wrote this in an artistic statement. I'm pretty sure I wrote this in my application to Roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it in my interview. Because for me, I was like, well, like, diversity with a lowercase d, mm-hmm. is, you know, like, making sure that folks from different groups and communities are represented. And of course, as we talk about diversity right now, that has limitations. But, you know, that is diversity. And something that I learned, I was fortunate enough to go to a high school that was very diverse with that lowercase d.
Mm-hmm.
And also where I grew up in Boston actually was very diverse with a lowercase d. But then when I went to college, I discovered a different kind of diversity, which for right now I'm going to call like diversity with a capital D.
Okay.
And that's, you know, like diversity of thought.
Ooh.
Like, so to me, and that became fascinating to me. I loved that I would be in reading theories, you know, a class that's literally just like we're reading theory.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be somebody who had taken math. Someone who was a math major taking reading theories, or someone who was an environmental studies major. Also in this class. And then my black ass doing, you know, like theater and German and literature and whatever the fuck else I was doing.
Right.
Right? Like, I loved that. I loved that we would all be reading the same text and we were all able to bring our own perspectives of how we saw the work and how we talked about the work and how we thought about the work that existed in, like, a multiplicity. So while I champion for and want desperately for our notion of, like, diversity with a lowercase d to continue to grow and change and become more and more nuanced and more specific. I also think that we need to think about diversity with a capital D as well, which is, again, like that diversity of thought.
Right.
Because then that means that that's also including diversity with a lowercase d. That's also including, okay, well, if we have folks who are thinking about things in a certain way, that means that they have different life experiences which have led them to be in that position. You know, like, I've had a very, very liberal education, very liberal arts focused. That doesn't mean that I want everybody and their mama up in the room to also have that, because that probably means we're all analyzing the text in a certain way, or we're all looking at the structure of the room in the same way, or, you know, we're pedagogically, we're probably kind of similar.
Right. Right. In the same lane in that way.
Exactly. Yeah. And while I'm so hype, I mean, I love working with other folks who I went to Wesleyan with because we do have a shared language.
Right.
But that's also limiting our understanding of how we can really make new, think new, and decrease or shift our ideas of normativity and homogeneity.
Right. So that brings me to your personal mission statement that was on your website.
Yes, read it.
That I'm going to read aloud. For the class, because I loved it. I loved it. And I think it goes along exactly with what you were just saying. Miranda is interested in work that dismantles the antiquated ideology of the white, cis, straight, male, able-bodied, middle-class individual as the stand-in for universal. The theater she seeks to make is a resistance. It disrupts the status quo of who and what is allowed in the theater and incites audiences in her community to action. Her approach takes classical, devised, adapted, and new texts, incorporating technology, non-traditional casting, mixed media, dance, and more in the pursuit of a unique interdisciplinary theater. Her theater is radically inclusive, fundamentally multi-voiced, oriented towards sparking dialogue and in direct conversation with the current American state of affairs. How'd that feel to listen to it?
That took me like a month to write.
Well, it's
that
brilliant.
That took me so long. I'm reflecting on how that writing my artistic statement and getting that was so hard. And I'm glad I have it.
I am too.
And it's still pretty tight.
Oh no, it's great.
But hearing it just makes me. I'm really something. I studied abroad in Berlin when I was a sophomore in college, and then I didn't have a job after graduating until Arena Stage called me and was like, "You want to come through?" And I was like, "Sick!" But I had also already bought a one-way ticket to go back to Berlin because I was like, "Oh, if I don't have a job, I'm just gonna go to Berlin and I'm just gonna go back to school and I'll see what happens." But then I ended up only staying for 3 months. But I've spent some time in Berlin. When I was in Berlin, I really, really, really started to recontextualize what I thought interdisciplinary was.
Okay.
Because before I was like, oh, interdisciplinary. Actually, maybe I didn't even know what it meant, to be completely honest. Like, I don't have a early memory of, you know, like, interdisciplinary. I'm sure I heard it, but, like, I wasn't really on that. And then when I went to Berlin and I started seeing theater there, I started seeing theater that was incorporating, you know, it was fully identified as theater. It was at the Berliner Ensemble, which is Brecht's theater. It was at the Deutsches Theater. It was at the Volksbühne, like, fully in theater spaces. But then in the middle of the performance, there would just be like karaoke.
Really?
Yes. I legitimately saw a show like where they would just like break out into Lady Gaga songs in the middle.
It sounds like it aligns with what like America thinks of as like immersive theater,
right?
Question mark. Yeah.
But they weren't like, there was like, this is theater.
Yeah. They didn't have any like disclaimers to it.
Exactly. Or, you know, sometimes they were just like, be a dance break. Or sometimes a set piece would come in and I was like, oh, a visual artist made this.
Interesting. Or, like,
but it was all in the name of theater.
Yeah.
And then I started, you know, doing more research when I got back from Berlin. And then I discovered this it's like an idea called the Gesamtkunstwerk, which means like the total work of art. And then I was like, and I wrote a paper actually positing that maybe theater is the total work of art. Maybe theater is actually the space where what we call, you know, music, dance, visual art, film, TV, like maybe theater can actually hold all of it. Like, or what if theater held all of it and we still called it theater?
Yeah.
Like, what if theater is our total work of art?
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of that thinking came, is I was like, okay, like, how can I make better theater? How can I make theater that is more than, or that is not just, I should say, what I know it to be? And what does that mean? What makes theater? Does it mean, is it theater because it's in a proscenium? And then if I have people dancing, does that make it a dance?
Right.
Maybe. What if it doesn't?
Right.
You know, I just kept asking myself, what if it doesn't? What if I keep calling what I'm making theater? Because isn't theater, I mean, I know performance to be defined as live bodies in a shared space. So what if, by that definition of theater and performance, if I'm throwing other stuff in there, how might that change theater? So then I started thinking about it from that perspective.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, like, I want to take it a step further. I want to I'm obsessed with Chef's Table. I'm obsessed with chefs.
Okay.
This is not a tangent. I'm going to get back, I promise. That was a shock.
I wholeheartedly trust you. Yeah, I just didn't see that coming. But like,
I'm obsessed with chefs.
Okay.
Great. So obsessed.
But like, are we talking about like people on Food Network or like you go to restaurants in New
York? No, like people who are like auteur, like chefs.
I see.
Like people who like, honestly, anybody on Chef's, like any person profiled on Chef's Table.
I don't even know what that is, Mariah.
It's, oh my God, it's this amazing document. You have to watch it.
Okay.
It's too much.
Okay.
It's so well shot. It's honestly, and sometimes I'm really gross sometimes. Sometimes I watch it while I'm eating nasty food because I'm like in, like it's like sort of masochistic.
Yes.
Like I'm eating like mozzarella sticks and like watching like, Michelin star chefs
obsessed.
Like going off.
Yes.
There's this one chef that I'm particularly obsessed with, and his name is Grant Ashatz. He runs Alinea in Chicago. I actually have a tattoo. Alinea is the paragraph symbol.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And
you have that.
And I have a small Alinea tattooed because he's like, yeah, and Alinea is the start of a new idea.
I love.
So in I watched the first I probably will do this tonight. I watched the first 5 minutes of that episode constantly.
Really?
Constantly, because Grant talks about what he's like, I work in a restaurant, you know, like I work in a kitchen. Why do we sit down and eat with a spoon? Why is a spoon shaped like that? Why is there a tablecloth? Why do people come? Like, why do people come? He questions every single element of the event.
Yeah.
He's like, why is it like this? Does it have to be? And how is it serving us? So for me, in thinking about typical theater structures, I'm like, what are theater's spoons and forks and bowls and tablecloths and how people come into the space and what it means for them to come to the event, how they eat, what they eat, when they eat, like the entire conceit of that. I'm thinking about the same thing for theater.
Yeah.
So when I started to think about, when I graduated rather from like, okay, interdisciplinary
themes and modes of making, and thus like interdisciplinary and intersectional folks in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, theaters, you know, like typical China, typical tableware is the cis, straight, white, able-bodied, middle-class man.
Right.
Like that is our typical.
Mm-hmm.
That has been our typical.
That's like the status quo.
That's exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like that is what is expected. It's standard.
Mm-hmm.
So if I begin to shift or change and graduate and move towards a higher understanding of who and what and how
mm-hmm.
might be standard,
mm-hmm.
that's sick for like that is what I'm trying to do.
That's the
like,
aim.
I that is my game.
Yeah.
And right now that means, you know, again, you know, my show, my most recent show in the penal colony, I was like, Black actors never get to say Kafka's text. I was like, that is not like mm-hmm. Kafka did not write this for us in mm-hmm. this way.
Mm-hmm.
But how can I use his text as a vehicle by which to tell our stories and give these Black actors the opportunity to have this text be in their mouths and just change our idea of who and how and under what circumstances these people get to say these words?
Mm-hmm.
It's not reclamation. It's transformation. I'm literally taking his text and using it as a tool, just like I would use choreography, just like I would use set and lights, and just as I would work with a designer. So I really started to reconsider and graduate my own idea of what normativity might mean, how it's catalyzed and propelled,
mm-hmm.
and what that might mean. And I'm at, you know, I'm 26, so I'm like just coming out of, I'm at the very early stages of considering what that might mean,
mm-hmm.
but it's so exciting to me. And I think that is how I think about those two sentences in my artistic statement, or maybe three sentences.
Yeah.
It's a few, right? But those few sentences and what that means for the future of an American theater.
Yeah, absolutely. It all was amazing. There were two things that really like stuck out to me that like I like gasped. I was like, oh. One being radically inclusive. I just love that phrase, and obviously I get what it means on like a basic level, but I guess I just wanted to hear from you, like when you wrote that, like maybe I guess maybe like why radically inclusive. Like I get it, but like, you know.
Well, to me, radically inclusive means that I worked at a show at Dartmouth mm-hmm. a year ago. Shout out to my Dartmouth ladies. I love them.
Shout out.
I'm obsessed with them. They're obsessed with me. We have several group texts.
Okay.
I love them.
We love a group text.
I love them. And there was so much shit happening on campus. That term I was there, where, you know, like I had these actors, these students
mm-hmm.
coming in and being like, you know, whether or not it was this racist thing or the Kavanaugh trials were going on. Like mm-hmm. there was so much going on. Mm-hmm. There was so much going on. And while the way I was taught to make theater is that, you know, you leave all your shit at the door.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, but that privileges certain kinds of people and certain kinds of bodies and certain kinds of like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
No.
Right.
Like, I want to be able to come into the room as my full self.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, to be radically inclusive means that I had to start structuring our rehearsals
mm-hmm.
to plan around potentially having up to 30 minutes
right.
of tears.
Yeah. mm-hmm. And like engaging with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And engaging with that.
Because that's going to affect what's happening in the room.
Exactly. Also, we were working on Eclipsed. Like, come on.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so.
You're right.
So I had to, and that's not to say, you know, that was a, I'm not saying that
my idea of radical inclusivity will always be that in mm-hmm. every single room. Mm-hmm. But it means that I have to meet people where they are at.
Yeah.
In order to be fully inclusive of the entire spectrum of humanity, especially when I'm working with folks who are frequently at the brunt of hate and bigotry and harm.
Mm-hmm.
And also who are at the intersection of love and passion
mm-hmm.
and pride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. You have such a way with words.
Really?
I could literally listen to you talk all day. I'm like, uh-huh. Like, I have my notebook. I should be taking notes. yeah, like fully and wholeheartedly inclusive. But it's radical because not everyone is even aware of that.
That's right.
Is how I felt when I read it.
Yeah, I don't think, and I think that a lot of people probably see inclusivity as a waste of time.
Really? You think so? Have you experienced that even?
Yeah. I don't know. I just think we're in the business of relationships and human, you know, I had an ex-girlfriend who was like, your art is so crazy because you like work with people.
Mm.
Like you are literally working with the human experience.
Yeah. Yeah. You're taking in all of the energy.
Yes.
That goes back to that diversity with a capital D, though, right? Because all of these people are bringing in their own experiences.
Exactly.
Into the room. Which is another question I had. Like, have there been collaborative moments where you're, you know, aiming for this diversity with a capital D, and then someone's diversity of thought or experiences is not open for collaboration, I should say. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. But I don't know. I feel like maybe this is where my Leo moon comes in. I just feel like it's exciting for me to be able to encourage folks to ask themselves why they think that in that way.
Okay.
So I do a lot of like, you know, someone might say, okay, like, I think that this is, I'm trying to give like a small example. You know, someone might be like, okay, oh, like, I think that this is the kind of table we need for this living room,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'll say, well, can we talk about what the table means instead of what the table is? Can we talk about the intention of the table? Can we talk about what it means for this table to be here? And then we'll talk about what it should look like instead of talking about what it should look like first. It's like, can I take us like a step back and talk about how it functions in the world and what it means? And then we'll learn about how it has to look and how it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I'm in the business of, did that make sense?
Yeah, looking bigger picture.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the business of investigating how and why people come to conclusions because okay. I'm so interested in like diversity and thought.
Mm-hmm.
I probably will. It's not even in a way that feels, you know, I hope that at least the feedback that I've gotten, it's not in a way that's like aggressive or like sometimes I'm like, great, like that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious about how people come to conclusions.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I don't mean, and I hope that, and I don't intend for it to be in a way that is defensive or like that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just interested in how we come to conclusions because that's the whole, like, to me, that's what's fun about it. I'm coming to one conclusion, you're coming to another conclusion. Like, oh, how'd you get there?
Yeah.
Like, what led you to that? And, you know, of course that sometimes might mean, well, like, like at my grandmother's dinner table, there was always plastic around it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, yes, it does come from like, well, when I think of a table in a living room,
I think of this.
But then sometimes it's like, well, for me, the living room means this. And that's when it's juicy. And I'm like, oh, well, for me, the living room means this.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about the table anymore. We're talking about
experiences.
We're talking about experiences, and we're talking about like I said, they still might be like, yep, that's the table.
Interesting.
I'm just interested in how people come to the conclusions that they come to and what that means from like a lived experience.
Yeah.
And also how our brains work and how we come to conclusions. like analytically and pedagogically.
I feel like some people are scared to do that, no? Because it feels like a disagreement. This is also me projecting a little bit. I'm like, I don't like to disagree because it's like uncomfortable. But like, have you had people?
But it's not a disagreement. It's literally just like, I'm a director, so I have all kinds of crazy language I use to like actually like make a suggestion when I'm asking, like when I'm posing it as a question. I can be like, I'm curious about how you came to this conclusion.
Yeah.
Like to me, it really is a
curiosity.
It's a real curiosity. Because then you know what it also is too? I feel like so much of the job in directing, at least for me, is to learn how people learn. And that's how I make an ensemble. So I probably do a lot. I mean, I can imagine that I do a lot more of that at the beginnings of a collaboration because I want to learn how people learn.
Right.
So that way I can give the information or the note or the conversation. And this is when my real Virgo energy kicks in because then I have like a fucking Rolodex in my brain. That's actually like what my agent says. He was like, you have a Rolodex.
Right.
So I think it's actually me learning, or it is in the service of me learning how people learn so that way I can be a better collaborator.
Yeah.
Because if I'm like, oh, I know this person was like, well, I looked at all these images and this is what I came to. Then when I'm talking to them, I can be like, oh, can we like send me your Pinterest board or whatever you're using and we'll like make it together. I want to be able to communicate with people. I want to be able to know how people learn so that way I'm able to
better communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I feel like it's more curiosity about the process behind.
It's not you're wrong, I'm right. It's
no.
Like what informed this for us.
Yeah. For them. Not even for us. For you. Like, how did you come to this conclusion?
Mm-hmm.
It's usually they're right. It really usually is.
But it's like knowing the thought process behind it.
Yeah.
The experiences that led to that. Fascinating. I'm fascinated right now. I want to just like observe you in a rehearsal room.
Come through.
Okay, I will. No, because I think like collaboration can be so tricky for some people, but maybe it isn't because, or maybe it is because they don't have this curiosity question.
Well,
mark?
You know what? It's actually interesting you say this. I'm trying to meet more collaborators actually outside of the like theater spaces.
Oh.
In like a dating way.
Interesting.
Like I just told someone, I was like, oh yeah, like I feel like I'd rather, or not rather, I'd be interested in like going out with somebody and like not even talking about theater or like watching a movie. Like I want to learn like how they think and how they talk and like how they process information before we get into the room.
Interesting. Like a first date kind of thing.
Yeah. Or like several dates.
Yeah.
You know, like we all got theater crushes. I've got several.
Who are
got
they?
Real
Wait,
crushes.
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh
who are the
God.
Theater crushes?
My latest theater crush is Kevin Horrigan.
I don't know Kevin Horrigan.
Oh my God. Kevin and I have been trying to connect over email for so long. And then today we like finally were like,
it's
like we
day.
Spent like 15 minutes talking.
Yeah.
And I was like, like,
I love.
Yes, bae.
I love.
Yeah, he's on my mind right now.
Okay.
Kevin Horrigan.
Shout out to Kevin.
Shout out to Kevin. But you know what I mean? I was like, oh, like I'd rather. Rather is like a strong word. I'm also curious about how we can, like I said, like we're in the business of like human, like I spend all my time with these people. Like I'm so interested in how they think and how they come to the thoughts that they do and how their lived experience as the person that they are contributes to that. And also how they read or how they intake information. I mean, honestly, this is why I gotta know astrology. I'm telling you now, future collaborators, please come correct. Get your birth time right. Get your birth, like,
your astrology birth chart ready.
I need to know what your Mercury is in or else it ain't right.
Okay. Let them know.
That's also very rogue. I'm like, I need all the information I need.
Right.
And there's nothing
process.
About it. But, you know, like, I want to know how. Yeah. I want to know how they work because then that's so. Then that's where the fun in directing comes. I'm like, oh, my God. Like,
yeah,
I've got this person like this. Like, I've got this person like this. Ooh, like, we really, like, we talk the same way. Or, like, you know, I know some people who are like, nope, I need, like, 4 days and then I'll come
up with something. And I'm like, amazing.
Wow.
But then there are some people who are like, nope, I want to talk about it right now. And I'm like, amazing. And then there are some people who are like, no, like, I just need to go do it in my own corner and like, I'll be back. And I'm like, amazing. Like, it's all fun for me. Like,
yeah.
That's why I love directing.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, holy shit. Like, this is so, it's just so fun for me to like, open that up.
Yeah.
And to be able to be in dialogue with that.
What is like, well, okay, one, it feels like it's a big puzzle. Like,
you
know, fitting all of that stuff together.
Yeah, I mean, I play Catan every day, so it's like, I actively play Catan on my phone every day.
Do you?
At least once a day. I've already played 3 games today.
Wow.
It's
again,
so bad.
Virgo energy being able to get 3 games in.
No, it's because now I'm beating all the, if anyone wants to play Catan, please play against me. I've beaten all the robots. I'm so bored. I literally beat them in like, 20 minutes. That's half my subway ride.
Look, you need a challenge, okay?
I need a challenge.
You're a Virgo for crying out loud. But hearing you say all of this, I'm curious to know, like, what is a collaboration you can think of where you have learned, I don't know about the most, but like learned so much, and you're like, this has now changed my perspective on direction? Collaboration, life.
I feel like it's the collaborate because I'm an advisor in high school. Like my actual like academic advisor said that I was an extremist, and I think that's true.
Mm.
I love things, or I hate things.
Mm. Not in the middle.
No, or at least I don't express it. There probably is more nuance.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll be like, oh my god, I'm the kind of person. It's like obsessed. Like I'm obsessed with so many things.
Right. Okay. like Kevin, for example. Yeah.
I'm obsessed. I'm obsessive. So, I think that the collaborations that really excite me are the people I'll become so like, I love this color. This is the color. I'm holding a Playbill mug right now. I'll be like, I love this color. This is my color.
Right. FDE 300.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Honestly. Bookmarked. Put in my Virgo Rolodex.
Obsessed.
Watch me at night tonight be like,
this is my new like
that's, yes.
cover photo on Twitter or something.
Yes. And order a sweatshirt in this color.
Yes.
So for me, the most exciting collaborations have been the people who are like, I need a week.
Okay.
Not that we can always have the time for a week.
Sure.
But that sort of idea where it's like, no, I need to think on it.
Mm-hmm. Before I express
Because that's
something.
A way, yes, because that's a way for me to be pushed.
Okay.
Or not pushed, but like, oh yeah, like maybe I will. Okay, like if they are, then I will.
Yeah.
Like if they're taking time to think about it, then I can too.
Right.
And then I'll be like, oh my God, you are absolutely right.
Yeah.
So for me, it's the folks who, I don't know, it's the sweet spot of a Venn diagram where it's like we have just enough or, you know, obviously, you know, different, like how much the overlap is varies, but I don't want somebody who it's like two circles right on top of, and I also don't want two circles right next to each other. Like that Venn diagram of like, oh, I want to work with people who think differently than me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like you can intersect in some points, but like you have your own perspectives on it.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of this mission statement, which like I had so many other questions, we'll see if we'll get to them, but I got so excited about this mission.
Close analysis. I'm so
I know.
Yes.
I like the similes. Wow. No, this artistic statement's so great. Clearly I'm obsessed with it. We love obsession.
We're obsessed with obsession.
Space for obsession. Okay. this is the first line about dismantling the antiquated ideology of the white, cis, straight, male, able-bodied, middle-class individual as the standard for universal. And I like the use of universal because I feel like what we're seeing lately in the industry, question mark, there are nuances here, is that, I'm putting quotes around this, but like black shows can easily be universal in the same way that people have thought of like fucking, who's a famous white playwright? Like Arthur Miller has been for so long. Do you know what I'm saying? And I'm just curious, like when I think about universal, I think of like, there's truth in it of like, I can relate to it. Even
that's
if,
right. So that's exactly right.
Okay.
So
I
like
your thoughts on it.
Yeah. No, but you're right. Like
Wait, what were you going to say?
Is that the idea that there's truth in it that you can relate to even if you don't have that specific experience.
Exactly. That's what I wanted you to say. Because that is what my understanding, you know.
Like, yeah.
We read these plays and we're in theater and we go see these plays that are supposed to be, you know, like universal and like timeless and, you know, dare I say, canonical.
Saying.
Like, we see this work and it actually ain't it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's an assumption that these people and these stories and how they came to their conclusions and what informed their conclusions and how they made the choices that they made and what their given circumstances are and what their objectives are.
Yeah.
All that stuff is universal and it's not true.
Right.
It's assumed that that kind of person is a universal experience and that we will all look at them and be like, wow, that's me.
Mm-hmm. We've been forced to lives.
Exactly.
That's not necessarily the truth.
I chose ideology. It really is an ideology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It really is like a concept.
Yeah.
That, yes, has been fueled by systemic oppression and marginalization and racism and white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100%. But it really is, you know, a stand-in for a universal.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at, you know, I mean, we see it all the time. We see it on like magazine covers. We see it on TV. Like, oh, like I want to be like that person. We were just talking about it before.
Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
Ooh,
y'all. When Miranda walked in, me and podcast alum Mark J. Franklin were going through it, talking about this, like, well, shit, it's like, a lot to get into.
Well, you know, but, like, the idea, you know, it's like, oh, like, the white woman.
Yeah.
As, like, a palette for all experience and all.
Right.
The cis white woman, the cis skinny white woman, you know, I could go on and keep adding more characteristics of Beth.
Mm-hmm.
But. That's the name I just made up for her.
I like Beth. It's good.
Yeah.
It feels right.
I could go on and keep adding characteristics to her, but the point is that we see her with a universality, at least consumerist-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm not like, oh, I am Beth.
Yeah.
But that's the point. Like, the point is that I'm expected to see Beth as this I don't know. I want to say like all American, like, or like the everyman, the everyman.
Mm-hmm. That's just not the case.
And that's just not the case. So how am I sitting in these theaters and people are telling me timeless story, blah, 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 blah. Like, you
for
know,
who?
For everybody.
Yeah.
Like, still can teach us lessons. I'm like, teach who?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who?
Yeah.
For whom?
Yeah.
And while there might be, this is generous, some intersections, I don't know. I'm just sick of the concept of universal being cis, straight, middle class white people.
Yeah. How, this is a loaded question, but I feel like you as a Virgo can take it on. How do we, as folks in the industry, as supporters of the arts, some of the listeners are, get the institutions, the people in power, to realize that it's not that is not universal?
Well, here's the issue. There's a realization and then there's an execution.
Ooh.
So they probably know it.
Yeah.
But how that happens is bureaucratic, systemic, and driven by capitalism.
Yeah.
So they probably know it. They're probably like, ouch, maybe. And again, that's probably pretty generous. I'm being pretty clearly.
Jay's interpretation
here.
Clearly
this evening's soapbox is like... fueled with optimism, which is not normally the case.
So I think that that mean, what that might mean is that we have to, but this is so, the problem with it is that it's not the job of marginalized folks to say what the, who they want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, while we can, like, support them when we are there, when they are there and they are on those stages, it shouldn't also be us, like, crying, being like, oh my God, like, again?
Mm.
Something that I hear a lot of places say is like, oh, that's a risk.
To put up.
Yes. To put up anything that is not, like,
communities.
Beth or Jim.
Yeah. These names are perfect.
I know. I can't. I'm just coming.
This is yes and. Yes. Yes and. Yeah. Improv like, training.
Yes, improv
through.
Training coming through.
Yeah.
It's so a the way I hear risk. Them talk about it a lot is a risk, which drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that at minimum, it means changing our idea of risk.
Okay.
Or them, like,
the people,
yeah, the people, the people who are in a position to be able to decide, the artistic programmers,
mm-hmm.
and their affiliates, have to change their idea of risk. Because again, you know, the reason why it's a risk is because it's outside of the normalcy, as I've outlined it in my statement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's a risk. So I'm like, okay, like, how is this a risk? It's only a risk because you're understanding it to exist outside of the structure that you set up and that only benefits certain kinds of people. So it means pushing, being like, well, how is it a risk? So I think that's like the main thing. I mean, that's one of the things, not the main thing. I mean, I just feel like, I don't know. Do we have to ask for it? Do we have to, like, I mean, I definitely think there's a part of it where it's like supporting the work when it does happen.
Mm.
But then it's annoying when that work happens once, you know, when there's like the black show.
Right. Well, I read somewhere on Twitter or the internet somewhere and they were like, I can't wait till we get to the day of there is so much. And it was like black work in this case, but like so much black work that we don't have, like, we can disagree and be like, oh, we don't like that show, even though it's written by a black person. Because that means, like, right now we want to be supportive of everything, so we continue to make it.
That's so interesting.
Do you know?
I do know. I just want.
I don't even remember where I read that. I think it was Twitter, but
that sounds like a tweet.
But it in so many characters, yeah. But it was an interesting thought of like, yeah, I think I do support all black work because of that very reason of like, oh, I want to continue to see more of it, but it can still be of these varied experiences, and maybe I don't like some, not all of it necessarily resonates with me, but that's right. Because I have like my own specific experience.
That's right. And know? I think, I mean, you're touching on something that I think is really important too, is that like recognizing that like by no means are any of these communities a monolith. So right. Like just because like that's one person's experience with a show,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that
everybody's
going to feel that way.
Yeah.
I was going to say something else. I also think that something that I feel really frustrated about is in like making sure that like I do not get pigeonholed into is like only directing like quote unquote black work.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like I'm like, I want to do revivals.
Oh.
Like yeah. I want to.
What revivals do you want to do?
Oh my God. So many.
Really? Okay.
I really want to do Tommy. I'm obsessed with Tommy.
The Who's Tommy?
Yes.
I love that show. Wait, we'll talk about that later.
I'm
yes.
obsessed with Tommy.
Oh my God. Yes.
I'm also obsessed with Raisin, uh-huh. the musical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I also love, what else do I love? Oh, I love Next to Normal.
Mm-hmm.
I very much like Next to Normal. And I want to make sure, too, that even when I'm doing that work, sometimes it might be like, oh, you know, like, there are mostly, if not all, black people in this new understanding of it. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want that to be the expectation. So I'm trying right. to figure out, too, like, how do we take everybody out of their boxes? Like, how do we make sure mm-hmm. that folks aren't just doing, you know, that we're not just putting insert marginalized community here into insert play concerning same marginalized community previously mentioned.
Right, 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 right.
So I feel like it's also like a paradigm shift about, it's not just more, but it's also, I don't have to be always talking about
what relates to your identity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's white people out here directing all kinds of shit. All kinds. All kinds.
It's true.
Everything. So I'm like, oh, that's an I mean, yeah, it's like the double standard that August Wilson mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, they can direct everything, and I can only direct these kinds of plays.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it also has to, it's a paradigm, it's a shift that has to happen for like everybody, like not just audiences and folks programming, but also, you know, the people choosing who is going to get to do what kind of work.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not taken off the bench to do a revival, then I'm going to be stuck on the bench, you know.
Until it's time to do the Black show.
In time, exactly.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really answer your question because I don't really have an answer, but
I remember what I asked at this point. What I asked.
You asked about, you know, like, what can we do to begin to, like, or how can we support this kind of work,
mm-hmm.
especially, you know, folks who identify as artists or who are supporters of the arts.
Yeah.
I guess I wouldn't say that I don't know, but it's...
It's a big question.
It's a question that has so much to do with the undoing of... I don't want to say there are steps because I'm also like, no, like all systems go. I love strategy, don't get me wrong, but I'm also like, nope, like just as we need to be flipping over artistic leadership, like we need to be supporting, you know, new directors and producers and playwrights and administrators, just as we need to be making more opportunities for stage managers and designers and giving them more homes and giving them more like, I'm like, all systems go, like all of this shit needs to be firing at once.
Yeah.
It's not an isolated and individual effort upon anything or on anyone, which is why I'm having trouble talking about what needs to happen, because I feel like I don't even know if we're in a position yet to be able to talk about, I don't know.
Interesting. How did you find directing in all of this, in this ecosystem?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Thank you.
I feel like I started directing in college. Well, no, I technically started directing in high school. And my high school had a very, very well-supported, well-resourced theater program where we did 3 1-acts every Friday.
Oh my gosh.
So by the time I graduated high school, I had produced like 40 or 50 one-act plays.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I had like been in probably like a dozen.
Wow.
And yeah, it was awesome. It was great. And then I was also stage managing, and I was yes-anding on the improv team. And then I went to college, and I guess what I realized in college, so I also used to be an athlete. I grew up very athletic. I played basketball, field hockey. I ran track, and I played tennis. Then in high school, I tore my ACL and my shoulder.
Oof.
Yeah. And then I, you know, I thought I was going to do like sports and also theater, but it really then just turned into, you know, like by like the rehab that I needed to do and the physical therapy I needed to do, I had to switch. And then I started acting, and then now my timeline's backwards. In high school, before I went to high school, I was an athlete. And then I started doing everything in high school, like directing, performing, all of that. And then I went to college. Gotcha. I was like, okay, like I'm interested in, like, I definitely want to keep doing theater, but I'm not sure professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And then in college, I somehow came to the conclusion that I was a much better facilitator. I found that my skill was in bringing out the creativity of the folks who I was in the room with.
Interesting.
And I just became more interested in creating space.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like I just knew that it was from like a facilitating standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how I got invested in directing and interested in directing. And, you know, I took a lot of directing class. I took 2 directing classes in college, which was really exciting. And one of them was an adaptation class, or directing 2 at the time was an adaptation class. And the text I chose was In the Penal Colony. So I've actually been working on In the Penal Colony since college.
Wow. Yeah.
In one way or another. It was very different in college. But yeah, I just like thought I thought that directing was a kind of facilitating, and I felt really excited about being able to create a space in which people felt like they could take risk and be themselves and be vulnerable and also have fun. And I thought that that was my skill, was to be able to like rally and unite and like create an ensemble. And I still feel that way.
Absolutely.
Like I feel like a connector.
For sure. Well, even just you talking about how, like, learning about how other people learn, I think proves that for sure. That's a huge part of your director persona, perhaps.
Yeah. So I think that's what got me into directing. And then, to be honest, I just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Arena Stage, and I was so, so grateful and still am so grateful for the time that I spent there. Before that, I had no idea what like LORT, SBT, SDC, AEA, like I knew nothing. It was my first professional theater gig. And I was pretty open about that. I was like, yeah, like the jobs that I've had up until then have always been in the admissions and at restaurants, because both of those gave me free meals.
Hey. Yeah.
And then I just kept going. So I think now I'm at an interesting transition, or not transition. My living is in directing. Like I've made a living out of being a full-time theater director.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I've gotten to that place, I'm like, oh, okay, maybe it is. Or I'm trying to make space for writing and producing and also performing again, because I really, really miss performing.
Mm.
So it's interesting when people are asked, like, well, what do you do? I usually say, like, well, I make a living as a director, but I also exist in these other ways.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to also water those plants.
Does it feel overwhelming to try to water all of those plants?
No.
No. Okay.
I recently realized that I have so much creative energy. It's actually, that's the most overwhelming thing, is that, you know, I have like a list of 12 projects that I'm like, yep, like these are all things
happening.
I want to pursue.
Yeah.
And like most of them are happening. I just have a lot of creative energy, which I feel really helps me like get the most out of my 24 hours in a day.
Right. Yeah. Plus that 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah. I have a ton of creative energy. So I don't feel overwhelmed. I feel that also I think being a freelancer is actually the best schedule for me, because I didn't do well in high school when I had like 5 classes to go to every day. I did much better my junior and senior year of high school when I had like free periods and I was choosing my own classes. I push myself a lot harder when I'm mostly making my own schedule. That being said, you know, obviously there's like months at a time where I'm like, yep, so you won't see me Sunday. You won't see me Tuesday through Sunday anytime that is not after 6 p.m.
Right.
Like, you will not see me, right? Like, obviously, I'm on, like, production calendars a lot.
Yeah.
And that's fine because, you know, I actually, anytime they do happen, I'm like, oh, yes, like, routine.
Right, like, right.
but I don't feel overwhelmed. I feel actually that, you know, I can spend, right now what I'm trying to work through is how can I still keep up the director momentum that I have, but also be like, nope, like there needs to be 2 hours every day in which I just write.
Yeah.
Like that sort of stuff is what I'm working through now. But it's exciting to be able to even have that. I don't want to say the option, but to be able to turn right instead of always having turned left for so many years.
Look, see you in your way with words.
That's so funny.
Oh, I get so inspired. Yes.
Yeah.
I love that though. That's great. I think that's helpful. I think being able to nurture all of those sides can only help every single part of you. Do you know?
Yeah. And again, too, it's also going back to what we talked about. Like, I feel like now I'm actually an interdisciplinary theater maker.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm using. Yeah. I'm I've been going to the director's gym, like, constantly and like getting on my director elliptical and like doing my director weights, and now I'm like, oh, now I can go to like a different gym and like see what it's like to do that, and then maybe what I learn from my time writing, or not maybe, certainly what I learned from my time writing or producing or performing will help enable, you know, like I started I literally just started doing drag on Thursday.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, his name is BB Brecht.
Oh my God, amazing.
If you've obsessed. Never seen anybody twerk in Lederhosen, you're in luck.
Because Miranda's here to BB Brecht is here to save the day.
BB Brecht is here to save the day. Wow. BB Brecht has come to New York for the first time in his life. He's never been in Midtown. He's never been in New York, and he's lost creatively. He's been really, really lost. So he's looking forward to spending more time in New York and asking questions and bringing up the parables on his mind and engaging with his new friends and other thinkers in Midtown.
Incredible.
So I just did it. We just did it on Thursday, and I learned so much.
Did you?
I learned that I am a very specific actor.
Okay.
Like, incredibly specific.
Like, you have to know the specifics of your character.
Yeah,
you
no, like, I yeah. need to know, like, how am I moving this? Why am I moving this? Like, super, like, I, like, need to know. Like, and, you know, like, the director I was working with, her name is Rosebeth Johnson Brown. She's also my producing partner for my producing entity. She was like, these are good questions. And I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, I'm learning so much about the multiplicity that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Also as an artist, and how, as an actor, I'm, like, very specific.
Yeah.
And that's been fun.
Yeah.
And it's allowed for me to engage with, like, that persona and that actor gym in a way that I was like, oh, like,
we're lifting these weights
now.
Yeah.
Because as a director, I've never even considered that aspect or that side.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. I love.
It's fun.
I'm obsessed with you. You're my theater crush now.
Yes.
Success. I could talk to you forever, and we will have multiple. I feel like we need to have, like, a series with you. We need to have, like, Miranda Mondays, where you, like, just give us motivation and life advice.
Oh my God, Miranda Motivational Monday.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly,
like,
sign
you
me
could
up.
Do it. We'll just, like, it's just all too much. Yeah,
it's all too much.
I'm, like, just thinking about it now. We'll make it happen, but. But so the last two questions to wrap up the podcast,
yes,
are as follows. One, if you could recommend a piece of Black art for the listeners to take in, so whether that's, like, a musical album, a piece of theater, a book, a film, a documentary, what would it be?
Anything. Does it have to be something that people aren't already, like...
No, people have said, like, Insecure, Lizzo. Mm.
Oh, okay, so people are going, like, okay, great.
Yeah, but then other someone, I was listening back to a few today, and someone said Huey, A Story of a Black Panther, which was, like, a book that, like, a lot of people hadn't heard of. Mm-hmm. It runs the gamut.
I would say, and maybe this is a little too general, but I spent a summer working at the Lorraine Hansberry Literary Trust.
Ooh, oh, that's amazing. Yeah,
yeah, that's wow. Like a whole other episode. Like,
see, that's what I'm saying. And, like, we need to dig into Berlin, too, of, like, yes. What that is. So we've got, like, more episodes to come. Yeah.
But I learned so much about Lorraine Hansberry, and I would highly, highly recommend that everybody look past A Raisin in the Sun.
Okay.
Or look further beyond A Raisin in the Sun. I mean, you know, there's, like, obviously her other plays, but she wrote this amazing list of things that she hated and things that she liked. Do you know about this?
No.
She just wrote a list of, like, things I like and things I hate.
Sign us up, honestly.
And it's so funny. She's hysterical.
Wasn't she, like, a queer Black woman?
Yes. Well, that's, like, she definitely was.
Okay.
But then there's tea to be spilt.
Oh, there's, like, political.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's I think it's both, like, not coming out, but also not, I don't know necessarily about the language. Yeah, that's
interesting.
At the very least, she's a queer icon.
She's
the very at the bare minimum.
Shout out to Lorraine.
Yeah. And I think it was definitely more than that. But Lorraine Hansberry is someone who I think about often.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about her impact often. And yeah, I would just really, really recommend that, like, everyone go, like
dig
see
deeper.
See what it's like to dig deeper past A Raisin in the Sun, especially that list of things I like and things I hate.
Yeah.
Is actually so funny.
Oh my God, I want to read that. I'm not, and I'm obsessed.
Yeah, she's an obsession for sure.
Ugh, Lorraine. The second question, and when I was listening back to episodes today, you were featured on one of like for the next question, you were featured from Charlie Yvonne Simpson. Yeah. It is, if you could give a shout out to a fellow Black artist, who would it be? Now, let me preface by saying everyone's like, just one. And I'm like, I know the point was to elevate and just like give some love to a fellow Black artist. But if you want to do top three or top 10 or top 1,000, that could work too.
The person on top of my mind right now is Dominique Ryder.
Okay.
Do you know them?
No.
They are killing it.
Okay.
Part of the reason why they're on the top of my mind today is also because I accidentally interrupted a meeting they were having.
Uh-oh.
Today, I was just like being my damn self, like looking for my check at one of the many institutions that pays me.
Amazing.
I literally was just looking for my check. And I accidentally interrupted their meeting. And I felt so bad.
That's a mood. No,
but,
no, that's good.
Dominique was just recently selected as the inaugural directing fellow. Or maybe the, you know, one of the early directing fellows at the National Black Theater. So they're going to be spending some time doing their own projects up there. I'm pretty sure 18 months. They have a residency up there. They're assisting everybody, everything.
Wow.
I think they're assisting Whitney White right now on her Soho Rep show.
Okay. Shout out to Dominique. Yes, I love that. See, we're just giving some love. And if they want to follow you on social media, where can our people do that?
Miranda underscore underscore Heyman. That's HAYMON.
Yes.
It's the Bitmoji of the Black girl with blonde hair.
Yes.
It took me a long time to configure my Bitmoji to have black eyebrows, blonde hair. So please hit me with that follow. Because
a lot of work went into it.
I mean, I'm pretty cute, but my Bitmoji is even cuter.
That's high praise.
Yes. I'm obsessed with my Bitmoji is like my alter ego.
Like you're Lizzie McGuire, how she has like a little cartoon person.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
Oh my God. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And until next time, y'all.